Well, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 395 for April 28th, 2013. Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering, one podcast at a time. I am Peter Reitzes, and I'd like to welcome to the show first-time guest, awesome blogger, Emma Alpern. How are you today, Emma?
I'm good. How are you, Peter?
I'm great. I'm very happy to have you on Stutter Talk, and I'm going to share your bio using some good voluntary stuttering. Emma Alpern is a person who stutters and a graduate student studying American literature at the University of Virginia. Emma went to college in New York and grew up in Philadelphia. Emma is interested in stuttering acceptance and options for stutterers beyond fluency. That's so awesome. Beyond fluency. We could just stop the show here because that just says so much. Emma blogs at stuttermore.tumblr.com. Emma, I would love to start to showcase your writing skills, because we usually don't talk about new blogs at Stutter Talk because there's so many of them, and oftentimes a person starts a blog and it stops quickly, but you really are a very talented writer, and you express the stuttering experience so well. So would you be willing to share something you've written?
Sure, yeah. So I'll read from an entry called Stuttering in the Media and Hope.
Perfect.
Great. So, growing up, I was hyper aware of any mention of stuttering in the media. And even though speech therapists assured me that they couldn't guarantee a cure, I was sure that there was one out there. If I could only find it, or work hard enough, or change whatever I was doing wrong. Our culture tells us that there is a cure. Around age 23, I stopped looking for this cure. And shockingly, my world started to open up. Suddenly, I wasn't within the before category of the stuttering binary anymore. I started to realize why those news stories about stutterers who found their miracle had always been so upsetting to me. These stuttering myths usually use the same words: tragedy, affliction, struggle, bravery, miracle. I'm sure any stutterer could list a few more. One of the most interesting words often found in these news stories is hope. The featured technique or program, we're told, is offering hope to people who stutter. Yet watching them, I didn't feel happier or more hopeful. Instead, I felt pressure, doom, failure, fear, because if I tried this technique or program and failed, that hope would be gone. When the media offers hope to stutterers in this way, it's actually shutting down another, larger hope, or even what we might call a set of hopes. It's shutting down the hope of living with a stutter, of accepting a stutter, of stuttering easily, of stuttering fluently, of stuttering without fear, without embarrassment, of stuttering openly, of stuttering without trying to not stutter, of stuttering as non-tragedy, or even in some contexts as victory. Rather than this constellation of hopes, we get a binary. Either you stutter tragically or become fluent.
Thank you so much, Emma, for sharing that passage from your blog.
Mm-hmm.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us with Emma Alpern. Emma is a person who studies, you study, but you're also a person who stutters at the University of Virginia. Your blog is titled How to Stutter More, Rethinking Fluency. For the uninitiated, tell us what that title's about.
Well, I wrote a post about this, and I guess the title comes from my response when my speech therapist at the time first told me about voluntary stuttering, which was, you know, I said, I think incredulously, you want me to stutter more? And I just think it's kind of counterintuitive sounding, but it's something that just, yeah, I guess I just like the radical nature of that idea. You know, then instead of like trying whatever I can to stutter less, I'm just going to stutter more and go from there and stutter, you know, make that my goal.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's radical. But now that I've followed the very path that you've laid out here on air and on your blog, I don't think it's so radical anymore. Because stuttering was making me trying to be fluent was making me so miserable, and trying to avoid stuttering was making me so miserable that when I saw the title Stutter More, I thought, wow, she's onto something. You haven't stuttered much on air with me. I think I've heard you stutter noticeably one time. But clearly stuttering has affected you quite a bit. Can you explain to listeners? I mean, so there might be some listeners at home, and I know there are because I've gotten a ton of these emails over the years saying, Peter, you do a great show, but you sound like a mild stutterer to me. Do you ever get that? Oh, you sound mild to me. Or how do you respond to somebody who might say, you really don't sound like you stutter that much?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is that weirdly enough, I'm really good on the phone. And I didn't used to be, but it's something that just kind of clicked for me a while back. I just feel very in control talking on the phone to people. So I think that's part of it. And, so my stuttering is very like context based. Like yesterday I just gave a talk to, the speech therapy students here at UVA. And, I was extremely disfluent speaking in that situation. I wish you guys could have heard me then. Which is fine. And I would say that, you know, I struggled with covert stuttering in high school. And I would say that, I mean, it's obviously not the same thing, but I think that people who pass as fluent have their own struggles with stuttering. So
you wrote on your blog that you were able to hide your stuttering, quote, from almost everyone in my life. Now, I've said things very similar to that. And the question I've always gotten from even good stuttering friends is, how is that even possible? Could you give us some light into your life of how it would be even possible to hide your stuttering from your loved ones and close friends?
I mean, it's kind of crazy looking back, and I don't know how I did it exactly. But I think Catherine Preston said in her book that she was kind of like a walking thesaurus.
Yeah.
And that was definitely me in high school. I switched words constantly. It was kind of like a high wire act. I was never really saying the words I wanted to say. And sometimes my sentences would get really weird and complex. And I also just avoided a lot of situations. You know, I went to high school that was kind of laid back, and I would always just kind of say, oh, I don't want to read aloud. And, you know, I would ask them to skip me, and that was it. I would just, you know, avoid a lot of situations. So,
and I know that when you were about 23 or sometime when you were in college, you were no longer able to suppress or hide your stuttering. And, you know, that was true in my life. And there's other people who have passed as fluent who've also shared that experience. Like, what do you think happens, or at least happened to you, when you were in college and you could no longer hide your stuttering?
Yeah, that was like slightly catastrophic for my life. I think I really didn't have the tools to deal with it. And I just felt like there was no hope for me anymore if I was going to, you know, openly stutter. I just felt like, well, now I can't do all the stuff I want to do. And it was very kind of like alarming to me to not be able to hide anymore. So, yeah.
I mean, I can recall being around 22 years old and for the first time in years and years hearing myself stutter noticeably and hearing myself get caught on words and feeling like I was semi-choking on words and seeing people visibly react to my stuttering. I mean, did you have any, well, your word catastrophic, I think, applies pretty well, but like, what's that like to all of a sudden know that people are seeing you as a stutterer?
Yeah, I guess I had to like relearn how to manage other people's reactions. And this is something that took me years to do because I was still in the covert stuttering mode where I would just pretend that nothing was happening. I didn't want to talk about stuttering. I didn't want to like acknowledge it. So if I stuttered with a person, I would just pretend that it wasn't happening, which obviously just kind of like adds to the awkwardness of the situation. So that's another thing that really helped me going to speech therapy is just learning how to talk about it. I think for a lot of stutterers, it's kind of a taboo topic, especially if you are covert or were covert. You know, it's something that you don't want to acknowledge is happening.
This is Peter Reitzes here with Emma Alpern, who blogs at stuttermore.tumblr.com. Now, I know you're at the University of Virginia, Emma. Do you know Courtney Luckman? Are you guys in the same National Stuttering Association chapter?
Yes, Courtney's the leader of our chapter, and she started it, I think, in November of the year that I moved to Charlottesville. So, yeah, she's great.
So you've mentioned speech therapy. Has belonging to a self-help group for people who stutter, has that also helped you deal with stuttering?
Yes, that's been huge for me. And I remember the first one I went to was kind of like a group therapy session. It was in Philadelphia when I lived there. And it took my speech therapist, like, I think a couple months to convince me to go to this. I was just, just kind of scared to go and to meet other stutterers and to really be there and acknowledge that I was a stutterer. But once I went, I absolutely loved it. And I just feel like it's such a huge part of my life now, going to the chapter.
Now, you used to receive speech therapy at Temple University.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have? Oh, it's funny, not funny. It's just interesting because I did some speech therapy with Woody Starkweather.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't know that. How was? Do you mind if I ask you on air? For me, he was very, very helpful. I had read some of his work, and I found him at a time where I was really ready to focus on being a stutterer and changing how I stutter. What was your Woody Starkweather experience like?
Well, I think it was probably pretty different from yours because I think it was at a time when I was not ready to change how I thought about stuttering. I think I was like 13 years old and just kind of like, you know, angsty and yeah. So maybe not the best time in my life, you know? Yeah. But
I love how you say that. Because you know, you're putting it on you a bit, which we usually hear a lot of people who stutter put it on their speech therapist, which in some cases is very fair. So you had a blog post titled Why Stutter More, and you wrote, quote, "Stuttering more is about reclaiming stuttering." Now, I've heard other people talk about reclaiming stuttering. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think Catherine Preston, I keep referring to her book, but I think she talks about this too. You know, for years it was just like this alien body in my throat, you know, that I was fighting with all my might. And I just couldn't imagine it actually being a part of me. And I couldn't imagine having a voice that, you know, having a successful stuttering voice. And I think that just reclaiming it for me was about letting it more into my speech where I could and talking about stuttering to people and just accepting that I might stutter for the rest of my life. And what am I going to do with that information? I can't fight it forever, you know, and also the fighting was making me more and more tense too. So,
yeah. And I love that idea of, or the way that you said it, that stuttering can feel like an alien body. I think it was Dean Williams who pointed out years ago that we often talk about stuttering as a thing or an it, mm-hmm. as something separate from us. And it was David Mitchell and Black Swan Green who referred to his stuttering as hangman. as a separate entity. And then if I'm understanding you, it's this idea of it's really not a separate entity. It's me and I need to deal with it.
Yep. Exactly.
Very, very powerful stuff. I'm glad you've mentioned Catherine's book. So the title of Catherine Preston's book is Out With It, How Stuttering Helped Me Find My Voice. We recently featured Catherine on Stutter Talk. You read the book in a 6-hour sitting, right?
Yeah, I was on a long train ride and I just plowed through it. It was great.
Could you share with us one part of the book or one comment or idea she had that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I guess I thought it was really interesting when she decided to do this project where she would go to the U.S. and interview all these stutterers, and she asked herself, like, why do I want to immerse myself in stuttering when I spent my whole life running away from it? That's just something that really spoke to me. I feel like when I first started going to speech therapy when I was 22 or 23, I could barely even talk about stuttering. It was just such a painful topic and something that I wanted to think about as little as I could, and yet I was thinking about it all the time, you know. And I feel like just getting involved with the stuttering community and talking about it with everyone in my life and just, immersing myself in it was such a amazingly therapeutic process for me. So,
you know, when Catherine interviewed me for the book, we went to a bar in Brooklyn that was close to my apartment, and we just sat there drinking. And I remember just thinking to myself, wow, what a great gig. She's going to travel around the country talking to people who stutter and renowned therapists and researchers. And she wanted to know who I thought she should interview. So I had mentioned a name and she'd either say, oh, I've just spoke to that person, or I'm scheduled to meet with them in a week. Mm-hmm. So I just go through the list, Phil Schneider, Scott Yaris, a bunch of stutterers I knew. And she's like, yep, got that person. But what was really neat is that she clearly was grappling with her own stuttering. It was clear that she was not at the end of the road and looking back at a mountain she had climbed, that she was still struggling with different mm-hmm. aspects of stuttering. So I envied the journey, even though I know that her journey was filled with struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So you shared on your blog that you recently called into a hit television show, or at least a hit in, I think, what you called a cult-like way. So it's a popular show amongst a small group of people, a television show called The Chris Gethard Show. Did I get that right?
Yep, exactly, Gethard.
Mm-hmm. And so you wanted to speak to him on air, and you had to wait on hold for an hour. Could mm-hmm. you tell us a bit about that experience?
Yeah. Well, his show, it's this comedy show, and I saw one night that the theme of the show was firsts, so it would be all first-time callers and telling stories about their first time doing something. And I had recently just gone through the drive-thru at McDonald's for the first time ever, something that I had always avoided, you know, one of the many situations that I had avoided as a stutterer. And so I thought it was kind of a funny story, and I was like, well, maybe I would call in. And, you know, my immediate response to that thought was, no, I can't do that. You know, are you crazy? I can't call into a TV show and talk on the air. But when I had that response, I kind of knew that I had to do it, because I've just been trying to not avoid things if I'm afraid of them. So I called in, and, yeah, I sat on the phone on hold for an hour, and my tension just kept kind of rising, and I just kind of had to talk myself through it. And overall, yeah, I'm really glad I did it.
That's great. And did you talk openly about stuttering on the show?
Yeah, and that's one of the other reasons I wanted to do it. I feel like stuttering is kind of my favorite thing to talk about. And for a long time, it was the one thing that I really did not want to talk about with people. But now I kind of will talk about it with anybody, and I kind of want to spread the word about it. So.
And did the show host respond to your call with a tweet? Did I read your...
Yes.
On your blog post, I'll read the tweet, and I'm going to censor it just a little bit because we're not going to say any curse words on a family-friendly show, but the listener can fill in the blank. So Chris that's a real stutter. Chris Gethard, with a real pull out there, he tweeted, quote, F cures, just say beautiful things with a wonderful stutter. I mean, that could have been written by you, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, he totally gets it.
that's almost frameable, right?
Yeah, no, you know, I told him I was going to embroider it on my pillowcase, so.
That's really awesome. Stutter Talk here with Emma Alpern, who blogs at stuttermore.tumblr.com. I'm going to read to you a few more things I saw on your blog that stood out to me. You wrote in one of your posts, quote, "It feels good to give up the fight against stuttering." Now, some people can be critical of stutterers because they say when we accept stuttering, we're giving up. And you come right out and say, "I'm giving up the fight against stuttering." How is giving up the fight against stuttering a success or a victory for you?
Yeah, when I was rereading that before I posted it, I was like, wow, I'm literally saying that I'm giving up. that almost doesn't sound good. But then I just decided to post it despite that, because I kind of like to be kind of, I don't know, to kind of claim that giving upness, I guess. I just feel like we as stutterers should not feel obligated to fight for our whole lives. I don't see why that should be the goal, that we have to fight this thing and we have to be valiant and stand up to it or else we're a failure. I don't buy into that. I don't think we're, you know, obligated to fight anything. This is just the way we talk. And I don't know. I don't really think of it as giving up, even though I used those words. I think that this is my voice. And, you know, if I stutter more, it's still my voice. And that's fine.
Now, in preparation for the show, I was going through your blog, and I was left with the feeling that you're not really giving up on anything. I mean, yeah, you use that phrase very effectively, but it really seems to me that you're battling to speak and you're battling to avoid avoidance. And so, I mean, just from the reader's perspective and the listener's perspective, it seems like you're really taking the fight to your stuttering, or is that going too far?
Right. Yeah, no. And I would say that I am still fighting, but I would say that I've sort of changed my object. Instead of fighting stuttering, I'm fighting avoidance. I'm fighting shame and embarrassment and fear. I'm fighting, I guess, interjections and all that kind of stuff. It's not the stutter that I want to fight anymore.
So have you been avoiding stuttering or changing words at all while we've been talking here?
No, I haven't. I know I sound weirdly fluent, but yeah.
Oh, I wasn't trying to be critical of that. I being someone who formerly passed as fluent, mm-hmm. I get the feeling from a lot of very well-meaning people in the stuttering world and speech pathologists and professionals who might say, you know, we can 100% accept stuttering. And, you know, every now and then, and it's much less, but every now and then I might change a word, and rather than beat myself up over it, I just remind myself, I could have stuttered there. I didn't have to change a word there. So I guess I was wondering if you would accept any type of slippage back into avoidance, or how you view those times where you still might avoid stuttering or be fearful of it.
Right. Yeah, that's something that I was thinking about recently, because I guess I kind of had the feeling that I was backsliding for a while, and I was kind of slipping back into using more interjections and got kind of distraught about it. But I feel like overall it's productive for me to not get into that like blaming mode of myself. And I feel like if I do interject a little more or switch a word now and then, I mean, it's best not to tell myself that I'm failing.
So you've talked about facing your stuttering and not avoiding it, and you've talked about voluntary stuttering. Have traditional speech tools, have ways of speaking fluently or stuttering easily, have those been helpful for you? Do you ever utilize them?
Techniques and stuff, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like I use a couple, but not all that many. I guess pausing and just speaking slower, even though I hate when people tell me to speak slower, but that has helped me. I don't use a lot of actual techniques like pullouts and that kind of thing, maybe some easy onset type of stuff. But I feel like it was hard for me to do any of that before working on just being more okay with stuttering itself. That kind of had to come first for me.
Right. And that's exactly where I was too. So once you started allowing yourself to stutter openly without avoiding, did you then begin to use speech tools like a pull out or an easy onset, or did you pretty much just allow yourself to stutter?
I think the plan was always to first work on stuttering openly and just to do like an intensive kind of work on voluntary stuttering and that kind of thing. And then we would move into tools once all that was kind of out of the way, all the avoidance and stuff. But by the time we had worked on that for a while, I almost was more fluent and more relaxed. And I guess we never really got to the tool stage exactly.
Yeah, I'm sitting here smiling. So I'm going to try to give it back to you and you tell me if I have it right.
Okay.
So basically, you went from very, very covert to somebody who stuttered very openly without avoiding. And somewhere in that process, by allowing yourself to stutter, you found that you actually became a lot more fluent. You stuttered a lot less. Is that about right?
Yes, exactly.
Isn't that sort of an amazing thing where you just want to at some point smack yourself on the head and just say, why was I avoiding stuttering all those years?
No, yeah. Totally. I think that so much of my stuttering personally came from tension. And I would get into these long blocks because I would get into a stutter and then I would be really stuck on it and trying to fight my way out of it. And once I stopped fighting, I had shorter blocks and shorter stutters.
This is Stutter Talk with Emma Alperin, a person who stutters, who's working on stuttering acceptance and is thinking about options for stutterers beyond fluency. Again, I just love that term, beyond fluency. You better buy up the URL before somebody else does. So looking back at high school, because I don't know about you, but for me, high school was pretty tough. Do you think there's any way, if you would have been involved with a good speech therapist or with a self-help group like Friends or the National Stuttering Association, do you think you could have done things differently? Do you think you could have found your way out of that covert closet back in high school?
I don't know. I feel like high school and school in general are such high stress situations for stutterers. I feel like there's just so much going on in your life then too, but I think I could have been less covert. I didn't know all my options back then, so.
So I'm going to read something else from your blog. You wrote, quote, "If you don't do the things that make you uncomfortable, you will probably never be ready for them. The comfort comes after you do it uncomfortably several times." Wow, that's what Jane Fraser, Van Riper, Malcolm Fraser meant about touching the hot stove. So could you tell us something you've done that was really uncomfortable for you, but you did it repeatedly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess one of the things was talking on the phone. I remember this particular speech therapy session where my speech therapist went into another room and had me call her, and I was just so upset. And then she had me do it again and again, and then she had somebody else on the other line instead of her, and I did it with them. And I feel like that was the beginning of me kind of changing my relationship with the phone, was kind of this exposure therapy, which was really painful at first. Because I'd always thought, like, okay, well, I'll go to speech therapy and I'll get fluent and then I'll be able to talk on the phone. It turned out that I could have tried to get fluent forever and I still wouldn't have been fluent on the phone, if that makes sense. Had to get on the phone and stutter a lot for a long time and have a lot of fear for a long time first.
So you went from being very covert to speaking to us now without avoiding words. What type of a process was that for you? And just to give you an example of what I'm looking for, I've said many times on Stutter Talk over the years that in my journey, I spent about 3 to 3.5 years using voluntary stuttering every day. Mm-hmm. And that my rule was that anytime I went into a store or bought something, I had to stutter on purpose every time. Those are some, and of course, there were other things I did, like write down assignments and go into stores and practice pullouts and practice pausing and practice stuttering with eye contact and joining self-help. How arduous was your journey? Give us an idea of this battle.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess there was a stage in between where I wasn't covert anymore. Instead, I was, my speech didn't have any classic kind of repetitive stutters in it. It was a lot of long, long, long strings of filler words before I thought I might stutter. So I would literally say, for, I guess, like 20 seconds until I felt like I could say the word or whatever. And so that was a big part of it. And then once I went to speech therapy, and I think that my biggest problem there was like trying to not have these huge long strings of filler words, because they were just taking up a lot of my time and kind of taking over my speech. So our first tactic was to try to not say them. So if I said we would be like, oh no, I just said let's not do that. But then we started to realize that the only way to get rid of them was to replace them with something. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't replace them with a fluent word because I was going to stutter, so I had to replace them with a stuttered word. So I guess that's kind of my trajectory, and it was just, the stutter itself was something I was really afraid of doing. I would do anything to not stutter. I would even have these huge, long, repeated ums just so that I wouldn't have to stutter. So, yeah, it was just a process of kind of desensitization. I think I said that right.
Yeah. When you were starting to come out of your covert closet and you started to allow yourself to stutter, what was the reaction from your family and friends when they started hearing you stutter?
Yeah, that was something I was really afraid of, you know, and I feel like that was where talking about stuttering came into the equation. I really had to sit down with my family. I remember sitting down with them in my mom's car and just tell them what I was doing in speech therapy and kind of, I guess, re-educate them about how this is something I wanted. And fluency was something that could maybe come later, but right now I wanted to be able to stutter openly with them. And so that's what I would be doing.
So did anybody react unfavorably, or was anybody very confused about why you went from passing as fluent to someone who stutters?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's weird because I wasn't exactly passing as fluent, because I still had kind of like, I guess, noticeably disfluent speech, but I just wasn't stuttering repetitively.
Okay.
And I was kind of avoiding it by saying all these other words instead. but they were definitely a bit thrown off by hearing me stutter again for the first time in a long time. And but everyone was pretty supportive of me, which I feel lucky about.
I don't know if it's because of the self-help world gaining prominence or the internet or a combination of factors, but I feel that more and more people who pass as fluent are coming out of the closet and being heard from. I remember attending stuttering conferences and workshops 10, 15 years ago, and it just seemed like I rarely met anybody who could pull off passing as fluent. And now it just seems like I hear from more and more people who passed as fluent. But you're a lot younger than me, so I can't imagine you've had this. I mean, have you found other people who passed as fluent? Has that meant something to you?
I have, yeah. I think I have met some people who kind of had the same experience as me, where they were kind of fluent in high school, and you know, they did a lot of things to be fluent and had a lot of avoidances, just like me. And I know Courtney said she used to talk on the phone with music in the background whenever she got on the phone, because that would make her fluent.
Really? That's interesting.
Right, yeah. So I think more and more, I have heard from quite a few stutterers who were covert, and they just kind of got tired of being covert, and they wanted to be able to talk about stuttering with others and to not have it be this taboo thing in their lives, which they could never reveal, like it's a secret.
My guest today is Emma Alpern, who blogs at stuttermore.tumblr.com. There's so much to ask you about, but I'm going to end the interview with just one last question. Has there been one activity or one conversation at your National Stuttering Association chapter that really meant something to you that you could share with us now?
Well, we had a speaker come. I can't remember his name at the moment, but he was one of the people who stuttered who was on True Life, I Stutter. I don't know if you've seen that episode.
Yeah, and in fact, Karen Herring, one of our B team co-hosts, was on that episode.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, huh. Okay. Yeah, well, this was one of the men who was on that episode. I think there was only one guy, but he came to talk to our chapter, and he just kind of became one of my heroes. It was amazing. He is now a speech pathologist at a school, and he stutters very openly, and he did this whole talk, and I just loved hearing him talk. It was just amazing to hear somebody stutter openly, you know, and give this talk and still be so engaging and such a good communicator. Just like wonderful to listen to. And I just feel like that's something that a lot of stutterers growing up, I know I wasn't aware of this option, that you could be a good communicator and stutter.
Yeah, it's interesting how so many of our paths cross, because my first self-help meeting, I was just so impressed that people who stutter were stuttering openly, and they were successful and cool people. And that gets mm-hmm. back to the beginning of our conversation, where you pointed out in one of your blog posts that we do have this option, a viable option, of living with stuttering successfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
It's nice that we could get back to that. That is a great place to leave things. I want to thank you, Emma Alpern, for joining us on Stutter Talk, and hopefully we can get you back on air sometime.
Great. I'd love it.
So this has been episode 395, stuttertalk.com. Go to the website, and you can find a link to our Facebook page, where there are always active and good conversations going on. Talk to you later, Emma.
Yep. Talk to you later. Thank you.